good afternoon and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Sitting in the studio with me this week is Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. Good afternoon to you, sir.
Good afternoon, Stan.
Thanks for being here, as always.
Thank you.
If you have a question for Mayor Rozworski during the next half hour, give us a call at 496-1999. You can also send an email to ask@WBAA.org, or you can tweet your questions to @WBAA News on Twitter. Well, I wanted to start with you the same way I started with John Dennis last week, which is Lafayette and West Lafayette recently signed a proclamation saying that you were going to work to combat domestic violence in both of those cities. I wanted to know what sort of programs the city is enacting, what sorts of resources you have to make an increased push toward that end.
Well, one of the projects, programs that we started a few years ago is called Fresh Start. And that was really in response to the domestic violence issues in the community and helping women get a fresh start. I mean, that's what the name stands for. And the way that program works, we work with the YWCA Domestic Violence Shelter and their program. And we would take women, particularly with children that were the victims of domestic violence, and we'd actually put them in a safe, secure location. And we use funds that would actually pay their rent for a year to try to give them an opportunity to get started on their own and to start their life over. We all know that many, many times the abused woman returns to the abuser because of financial reasons, lack of babysitting resources, lack of being able to find adequate shelter. And we really felt that if we could provide that foundation to get on your own for a year, that would help a lot of people. And so we've been doing that for a couple years now. We've helped so probably somewhere close to 20 women through that program. And, you know, we're pleased to say, I don't have the exact statistic in front of me, but about 90% of the people in the program did not return to their abuser. And so we do believe that helping people get that fresh start, get that first year under their belt, knowing they've got a safe, secure place to live so they don't miss work, they can deal with child care issues, they may even have transportation issues, is really effective.
So it sounds like your goal is to break that relationship between the abuser and the abused, as long as the person who is being abused can get out of the relationship in such a way that their life still can continue more or less as it was, just more safely.
And that's correct. I mean, we know we have to break that cycle of violence if we're going to truly make a difference, not only for the person that's abused, but many, many times for the children that are involved that see that type of abuse, see that type of activity, may be abused themselves, that if we don't break that cycle and break some of those bonds, the chances of the kids progressing the way we'd hope they would is not very good, and the chances of that abused person going back into that relationship and that abuse actually getting worse is very good. And that's why the police department also does the protective orders and mandates some of those activities. And over the years, the laws have changed too to help strengthen those things in the areas of domestic violence. And so, you know, and also we're working right now with the YWCA to continue to look at opportunities and how we can combine our resources to actually do a better job.
Causes me also to think about something you and I talked about in this program a couple of months ago, which is the creation of that sort of one-stop shop for social services that Greater Lafayette is looking to establish. This would seem to be sort of an issue that could be under that umbrella, and I wanted to ask you for an update on that project. Has it gone anywhere? Have we gotten any closer to identifying how that sort of center might be created? When last we talked about it, we said, look, there are lots and lots of intermediate steps before we get to that point. I just wanted to ask you where along that line of intermediate steps we are.
Well, I'd say we're still relatively close to the beginning. As you know, that they're doing a different way of triaging folks that come into transitional housing, which is proving to be effective. The group that's working on this recently took a trip to Ann Arbor, Michigan, and I apologize, another city, I don't recall right off the top of my head, to look at a couple other ways that things are being done, services are being provided, to try to get some ideas. I know members of my staff went, Major Irvin from the Salvation Army went, And so we're doing some data gathering right now, trying to look at best practices. So it is still moving, but you know, we're just taking small steps at this time. But we are committed over the next couple of years to find a better way to deliver services.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're chatting this afternoon with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. We'd love to have your questions. Call us at 496-1999, 496-1999. Also send emails to ask@WBAA.org, or you can tweet your questions to @WBAA News on Twitter. I did want to get to one email. Philip Gautier wrote in, and he's looking ahead to winter already. It seems that the winter weather is... It feels like it's on its way anyhow. And he writes the following. He says, every winter, the sidewalks of downtown Lafayette become a miserable and unsafe mix of ice and slush. Lafayette City Code requires property owners to clear sidewalks within 6 hours of nightfall after a storm under penalty of up to $1,000 a day. He says, what are you doing to enforce the city code, and where can residents report property owners who violate the code, and what specifically will be your response to complaints?
Well, we do enforce the city code. Stanley Knight, our ordinance enforcement officer, and the police department and others in the street department, depending on how big the snow is, they do issue warning letters, and then we have issued citations. Obviously, we try to get people to voluntarily comply. We would prefer not to have to, quite frankly, during the snowstorms, because everybody is so busy working. Have to do that, but we do, and downtown is a challenge sometimes. Even though sidewalks have been the property owner's responsibilities in Lafayette literally since the 40s when that ordinance was passed, sometimes there still seems to be some confusion, you know, who's responsible for the sidewalk, but it is the property owner, and we do expect people to get out and to shovel those sidewalks. We're a little lenient on the 6 hours because depending on when that snow stops and how that all works, that, you know, that ordinance probably needs tweaked a little bit. That might be a little unrealistic under certain circumstances. So we do have some we do give a little leeway there. But, you know, it really is people do need to shovel their sidewalks. And I can tell you there were, you know, we sent out 300-400 letters sometimes to people that didn't. And it's unfortunate, but the reality is some people just don't really feel like it's their responsibility, and so we have to take that to the next level. And but it really is, and I hope this winter we have a much better voluntary compliance of getting those sidewalks shoveled. I understand that sometimes people shovel their sidewalks, and then the city trucks come by, and they'll throw ice and snow back up on the sidewalks because there's certain areas where there's not much parkway between the gutter line and the sidewalk. And I understand that happens, and you know, we'll never be able not to ever do any of that, or we won't be able to get the snow plowed. So we just ask people to be patient, and that's why I think the 6 hours needs tweaked a little bit too. That's almost pushing people too quickly to get out and shovel before we have a chance to get down the majority of the roads. Depending on the depth of the snow, you know, in the first 12 hours, we'll have most of the arterials open and what we call the snow emergency routes open. About 18 hours, we'll be into the secondary roads. And usually in about 24 hours, we have most of the roads cleared depending on the snow. Now, if it's, you know, 8-9 inches, it takes a little bit longer because we have to find places to push it all. But typically you have a 3-4 inch snow within about 24 hours. We'll have all the roads cleared.
Let me ask you on that topic of winter and on the topic of possibly having to tweak ordinances. I wondered if there was anything in this last winter that was so severe and seemed to last for so long that the city learned, or that you decided, hey, maybe we need to look at this aspect of how we treat winter, be it the cold, be it the treating of the precipitation. Is there anything that people are going to notice this winter if there's snow on the ground, or notice that the city is doing differently?
Well, I think one of the things, and we're going to have to be really careful this year too, road salt has went up dramatically. In price, from about $56 a ton to $94 a ton.
So almost doubled.
Yeah, so it's almost doubled. So we'll probably be cutting the road salt with sand to get, again, we'll be mixing sand with it to make it go a little bit further. We did that last year, and we'll probably continue to do that. The thing this year that people might see. You know, I've always been a little bit reluctant to declare a snow emergency. I know, unless it's just been really, really bad. But
and you're talking about where keeping people off the roads and things
well,
like
no,
that.
Well, no, I'm talking about where you can't park in what the designated snow emergency routes.
Okay.
We have designated snow emergency routes all throughout the city, so people have to take their cars off the street, get them up in a driveway, get them in a parking lot somewhere. And I know that that's inconvenient for people, so I'm sensitive to that. But the reality is it greatly enhances our ability to quickly get the city plowed, because when there's no cars, we can go curb to curb right away. The plow trucks can make much better time getting up and down the road. So if there's anything that might change, it might be that, where I would be more willing to use that just a little bit more, a little bit earlier, maybe not require such the depth of snow, because I know it's inconvenient, but it really does speed up the plowing process, and we can get done a lot quicker, a lot safer. And in fact, we can get done quick enough that once we get through there, we're actually done. So if you know, you come out and shovel your sidewalks, we're probably not coming back through to throw snow up on them. So that might be some changes there.
Got another listener question. Jen from West Lafayette wants to know what the city plans to do about a shortage of foster parents. This is something that has been talked about a lot in the last couple of years in terms of getting more people into the social service system as helpers. Is this something that's been talked about, especially as you're considering the idea of that one-stop shop creation?
No, not foster parents and that one-stop shop, because foster parents and CASA, court-appointed special advocates, you know, go through the court system through the juvenile judge, and that's really a state process for being foster parenting and the CASA. So we have not addressed that as part of that one-stop shop, because that has to be assigned in a judicial proceeding, because obviously some folk parents are losing their rights to their child, at least temporarily. But, you know, we've been very supportive here, particularly of the CASA program. We know that that is tremendous, tremendous help to kids that are in very difficult situations, you know, that's hard for some people to even imagine, being a policeman for over 20 years and a juvenile police officer for a portion of that. You know, I've seen firsthand some of the situations that those kids are in and what they've been through. And so having those court-appointed special advocates to help them through that process is very important. We're very blessed to have a very robust program here in a community. And then certainly, foster parents play such a role. And I've been involved in a few national adoption days, and actually sat in a courtroom a couple years ago when a couple formally adopted their young son that had been in a very difficult situation. And so, we certainly support that, call on the citizens if they can to be involved in that. But we don't actually see that being a piece of that service engagement center that you and I have discussed earlier.
All right, Jen, thank you so much for your question. If you've got a question, you can call in at 496-1999. You can also send email to ask@wbaa.org or tweet the question to @WBAA News on Twitter. Well, we talk a lot on this program about the similarities, I think, between Lafayette and West Lafayette, and I wanted to talk to you about one of the differences, which is West Lafayette has a smoking ordinance. Lafayette does not, at least in a lot of places. There are still a lot of bars and places that allow smoking. Would you consider expanding that to all businesses the way that West Lafayette kind of has it?
Well, you know, we started out with our smoking ordinance that did allow, if you were over 21 and not open to the public, you could still have smoking.
So clubs, that sort of thing.
But basically bars and clubs. And I can tell you, I can't give you an exact number, but many, many of those have voluntarily went non-smoking. Now, you probably saw the story in the Journal and Courier not too long ago, where the pool hall downtown Lafayette there in the Renaissance Place is now non-smoking. And I would venture to say that 97, 98% of all establishments in Lafayette are non-smoking now.
So that sort of begs the question, why not push on the other 2 or 3% if it's only a small minority like that?
Well, I mean, I think we tried to look at a balanced approach in our community, and we tried to be sensitive to other people's rights in businesses that they own and decisions that people that were over 21 years of age wanted to make. And I think that was it was a good path for us at the time. It was not easy to get that ordinance through. Even in that form, there were some very heated meetings and debates. There's a lot of passion on that issue. But I can honestly say I think the council did a good job. We took an approach at the time that worked. Over time now, it's really kind of taken on a life of its own. In fact, you know, we passed the park board passed an ordinance for the parks earlier this year that all of our parks now are totally smoke free. So not just when you're in Loeb Stadium or not just when you're in the swimming pool or the zoo, but the open air areas like the playgrounds, the picnic shelters, all of those areas are now totally smoke free. And if you go up to the park, you'll see that there's signs. And so that was another big step that we took this summer. I don't think there's too many places that have went to that total non-smoking in their parks, even in the open air spaces, but we did. And we think that's a good move for our kids and the people that are using the parks.
Can you see revisiting this at any point soon?
No, I don't think so. I think it's moving in the right direction, and I think it'll continue. I think it'll continue to do that, and I think we're in a good spot right now.
Another emailed question to us. Stacy Levi writes in and says the number of mopeds appears to be on the increase in Lafayette. She believes they cause traffic backups. She says you see kids that are not even 15 years old cruising out around town without helmets. She says at what point do we curtail these slow-moving modes of transportation and try to move them out of the traffic flow? Is there anything you can do about that?
Well, you know, we've talked about that for the last several years, and last year the state legislature did tighten up some of the laws concerning mopeds. I do not disagree with that statement at all. In fact, I have pushed and pushed myself. I believe that mopeds should have to have insurance and a driver's license. I don't believe that they should be any different now than any other vehicles on the road. They are in the moving lanes of traffic. There are a significant number on them. The caller is absolutely correct. And they are involved in accidents. Some are their fault, some are not. But, you know, we have pushed, and I have pushed publicly, for stricter laws concerning the mopeds. And like I said, this year, you know, things got they've got to register them and a few things like that. But I personally agree with that and think the law should be, but we can't. We've looked at a local ordinance, but to require somebody to have a driver's license or somebody to have state mandated liability insurance, you know, that's really something that the state legislature needs to take up.
You and I last month talked about the rejuvenation of downtown. We talked about it as, you know, think about what it was 100 years ago. How do we get back to where it's that sort of bustling pedestrian infrastructure? You actually, in the last week or so, have had consultants come in and give you some idea or take a look at downtown. And they're going to give you some ideas on how to do exactly that. How do you revitalize downtown? I wondered if you had any sense from them just in their early impressions of what they might tell you or places you might go to start getting that work done.
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, right now we have a lot of construction downtown with buildings for people to live, which is a big piece of the puzzle. Now, how do you get people to actually engage downtown, not just, you know, live downtown or work downtown, but actually engage? And that was kind of the message that they told us. How do you get them to interact with people? How do you get them to gather? Because when people gather, then other people see them and they gather. And how do you create that energy? And, you know, they came up with some good ideas, you know, just initially, just small things like, you know, maybe putting some tables with umbrellas at Reilly Plaza there in the middle. You know, we don't do too much with the middle. I saw a couple neat things where a city rented a temporary putt-putt golf course that you could just lay down. You know, it had 18 holes, and they just set that in it looked like a parking lot plaza area. It was only there for a week, but families could come down for that week and just play putt-putt. So
sort of reminding people, hey, the downtown is here and there are things you can do, things that might only be here for a short period of time, kind of creating that feeling of scarcity almost.
Yeah. Another community did a game night where they had a plaza and they wheeled in a wagon that had checkers and chess and Monopoly, and families could come down and they had tables set up and play games on the plaza. So there were some things like that that were pretty low-hanging fruit that really didn't have a lot of expense associated.
So there's a couple of different approaches here. There's the impermanent approach like that where you bring things in on a kind of rotating basis, and then there's what do you do about all of the facades along Main Street that need fixing and sprucing up? Those would seem to be two different parts of this same pie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they're obviously the infrastructure piece is a big piece. But this group really, because you're right, you got to do that. But this group really focused on how do you bring people to the space and make them want to be in the space and want to be there. You probably saw a little bit of the coverage about pop-up parks. You know, do you take away two parking spaces in front of a business and create a bigger seating area or some green space or a temporary area where people can gather and just talk because the sidewalk's kind of narrow? You know, I personally am all for that. If there is a business that says, you know what, it's more important to me to have some kind of seating or pop-up park area in front of my business rather than two parking spaces, I think in the long run I'd be better off. I mean, that's something the city would be very open to. And I'll be interested to see their full report and the kids from Ball State that participated with a lot of energy, a lot of enthusiasm. And I think it was a good exercise for us. It got some eyes, some outside eyes to look at the community and people that have looked at, you know, projects and opportunities all over the country and really all over the world.
You're the first mayor we've had a chance to talk to since this happened. I wondered how you thought, if at all, the Supreme Court's decision not to hear Indiana's appeal and the appeal of four other states on the gay marriage ruling affects the city of Lafayette at all. I mean, we talked a little bit about this in June and July when that was still relatively new for the first time. Now it seems slightly more permanent. Have you noticed or can you cite anything that ruling does to affect the city?
Well, to go back to kind of the first part of your question, I was a little surprised that the Supreme Court didn't just actually take it up.
And, you and many other people, it sounds like.
And the way that it was handled. So that was a little bit surprising because it does make it more permanent, but I'm not sure that it puts the final answer to it that maybe people were looking for on both sides to understand. I haven't noticed anything different in Lafayette since it happened. Obviously, there are couples that are very happy and are going to take the opportunity to get married. But, you know, I haven't seen anything different than that right now. I think, you know, this is a warm, welcoming community where people feel comfortable, and I think they're going to continue to feel comfortable here. And I'm not a legal scholar, so I don't know if that means the Supreme Court never jumps back in, you know, if they are totally done with it or what that means exactly. But
well, it seems it's from everyone I talk to, it seems unlikely that this is the last we'll hear of it. But let me ask you something that I asked Krista Coffey, the clerk, which is there was some paperwork, at least at the state level, that needed to be changed in order to accommodate same-sex couples. I wonder, is there any sort of analog at the city level where you have to change any forms or you have to think about assessing these couples in a different way than you might have before? Anything like that?
Well, Stan, that's a good question. Nothing jumps out at me off the top of my head. People sign up for building permits, water, things like that. That's never been an issue for us, and it won't be an issue for us now. So I, right off the top of my head, I don't think of any forms that we need to change. But, you know, if there is, we certainly will. And I don't think it's going to cause any need for any big changes at the city.
So obviously, moving on to a different topic, we're about a month away from Election Day. In just our last couple of minutes, I noticed you popped up in an ad I saw for one candidate on my television the other night, and it caused me to think about a year from now. Are you running for re-election?
I am.
All right.
Yep, I love Lafayette, and I don't have any desire to go anyplace else. And so, Yeah, I've actually already started getting ready and getting some things in order. And so, yeah, I plan to announce my reelection in January, and we'll be ready to hit the ground running with a robust campaign.
Does it go any faster the second and third time you're trying to get elected? Is there existing infrastructure there that you just sort of put back in play, whereas the first time in, 04, 03, you had to sort of start from the ground up?
Yeah, that's exactly right. We have a lot of infrastructure in place, you know, with websites and social media and advertising designs. And I probably still have 1,500 yard signs in my garage. So there's a lot of things. You know, we have our maps all put together and we already have those up. We have a small with technology, you know, we can run a lot of the campaign right out of your home. So we have a room that has maps on all the walls, and we've already got all those up again, and the table's set up, and we've already have letterhead and envelopes already. And so we've already started putting some things in place. And like I said, we plan to hit the ground running in January.
One more real quick call-in question. Someone called in and wanted to know if people can drive and park golf carts during downtown festivals to aid in the parking.
No, we don't allow golf carts on the road unless you're affiliated with the festival or the police department or sheriff's department. Do you use some golf carts to facilitate operations and them in there patrolling? But we don't allow golf carts on city streets.
This it sounds like it goes back a little bit to the moped question of exactly what sorts of vehicles are you allowing on the road? And it seems like that's been something that cities have had to consider more in the last 10 years or so.
They have, particularly some smaller cities. That's not something that we've really looked at because we have a lot of roads that have pretty fair speeds on them. And folks probably not going to stay on the side street. So,
all right. Well, Mr. Mayor, we are out of time for this week, but we look forward to talking to you again at this time next month.
All right. Thanks, Dan.
This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. If ever you've got a question for any of our four mayors, we encourage you to email that to ask@WBAA.org. And you can tweet your question whenever it occurs to you. Pop out your smart device and tweet it to @WBAA News on Twitter. Be with us at this time next week for our talk with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Have a nice day.